Welcome to Botch's Off-Road Podcast. Today it's just me. I'm Alex, for anyone who doesn't know. Technically it's not just me. Today I am recording the intro for an interview that I did last week with Tom Craig, the president of Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association. It's a fantastic interview. Tom's an awesome guy. He had gave me a lot of information, taught me a lot about how Michigan works. And I am really excited for you guys to listen to this. I will slip in on Friday. You're going to hear a wrap about our third gen weekend. I'm editing this on Sunday. So I just got back from third gen weekend. It was a great time. So you will hear all about it on Friday. I think we're having the other two guys that were on. So it should be me, Mark, Gavin, Duncan, and Shane all on one podcast. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be hard to follow along with, but it'll be great, and you'll hear all about our third gen weekend where we had a great time. So not to overshadow the interview with Tom Craig, I will jump right back to past Alex, and he will get it going. So I hope you have a great day. Hi, this is Alex. Today is a little bit different of an episode. We got Tom and... I'm sorry, I forgot the other guy's name. Craig?
Yep.
Perfect, I was dead on. We got Tom and Craig from the Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association. They're big in Michigan. I'm sure they're big around Great Lakes altogether, but I'll kind of give them a floor. I kind of want them to be able to tell you... you know, what Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association is, what they stand for, you know, all the important things that come out of that. So I'll kind of hand it over to Tom and let him talk a little bit there. So, Tom, all how right. are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Alex. My name's Tom Craig, and the other gentleman is Craig Pinkelman. I'm president of Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association. And what Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association is, it was first incorporated in 1969. So we're working on 56 years of being the voice and advocate for full-sized four-wheel drive off-road vehicle use in the Great Lakes area. Originally, I believe, you know, it was more widespread and, you know, it included a lot of members from other states. Primarily our membership comes from Michigan. We're all based in Michigan, but we do have quite a large number of members from the Ohio area, specifically Northwest Ohio, and we do have some, you know, from Indiana, and I believe we have one from Ontario.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but you know, like I said, Great Lakes has been around, you know, since 1969, and you know, we have always been the, you know, the group fighting for access and keeping trails open. You know, the state would prefer not to have any you know, off-road vehicles roaming around the woods, and you know, Great Lakes was involved with, you know, the creation of the ORV system as we know it way back in the day. And, you know, we continue to this day, you know, fighting to keep access available for everyone. And you know, we're not only fighting for the full-size four-wheel drive vehicles. Yeah, we work with the DNR on issues relating to, you know, 50-inch ORV trails and, you know, side-by-side access and stuff like that. So it's, you know, yes, our primary focus is full-size four-wheel drive vehicles, but yep. we dabble in, you know, all aspects of the ORV program.
You know what, the introduction of side-by-sides, we've kind of all been lumped together, so it's kind of, I guess it'd be important to kind of grow to the point where you're looking after them as well.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out how to incorporate them into our organization. It's a little difficult, you know, with the events that we have historically done. You know, it requires, you know, a plate, you know, a yep, license plate. So it's, you know, it's a little tough. You know, the side-by-side faction of the ORV community certainly needs some organization.
For sure. Thinking back, I mean, now, at least I'm from Nuevo County, to put that out there, but
okay,
at least around here, side-by-sides can ride most of our roads. They just can't ride like M37 and stuff.
Right.
So, but I know down farther south, pretty much south of us, that's completely different.
And Nuevo's up by Silver Lake, correct?
About 40 minutes from Silver Lake.
Okay.
We're a little bit more east than what Silver Lake is, obviously.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. And then, you know, not to leave Craig out of the conversation, Craig is kind of our Swiss Army knife of board members. Pretty much whatever needs to be done, you know, Craig usually raises his hand and takes on the challenge. You know, he wears many a hats. So why don't tell us about you, Craig?
Like Tom said, I'm Craig Pinkelman, and I came on board with Great Lakes, I don't know, what, two and a half years ago, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
After coming out of the club scene, and I see what I got a bit of an education on the ORV program in the state of Michigan as I started getting involved in more and more things, and being a Jeep person now, it was natural for me, and I'm really happy under Tom's leadership and the other board members as well to be involved in what we're doing. And I guess, if you don't mind, Tom, I'd like to build on some things that you said.
Yeah,
Great Lakes has been around for since 69, like Tom said, but we are not a club. We are an association. Our mission has evolved into supporting club, and that the club scene has really grown for side-by-sides, for full-size vehicles, Jeeps, Broncos, Toyotas, my gosh, all kinds of overland vehicles and things like that. The dirt bikes, the ATV and everything. We focus on representing them in when it comes to things like the legislature and with the DNR and that. We are very involved in things like what's called the MMRC, Michigan Motorized Recreational, I say coalition, but it's council. and other things like that, to have the voices of the off-road community heard as a user group. And also bearing in mind the voices of other user groups outside of the off-road community, because we utilize as the off-road community, we utilize shared public lands, the state and national forests, and that. And that's where our niche is at, really. And I don't want to take anything away from Tom, because he has devoted a lot of time, of his personal time, investigating, getting intimate with a lot of things. in order to be a very effective voice for the off-road community. We do some events. We do our winter blast. We do a 2-member meetings a year. We do a Toys for Tots charity thing at the Rocks and Valleys Off-Road Park there in Harrison, Michigan in December. And then we try and have a presence at other things and evolving more and more into having a presence to support the clubs and things like that, educate as much as possible about the ORV program, about responsible wheeling and stewardship and that. For example, this weekend, a number of us are showing up in St. Helen to support a club event for a cleanup of the state forest over in the St. Helen, Ogama, Ross Common, Houghton Lake area. We probably will get as far away as even Rose City, maybe Gladwin, as we do that. That's more our role.
And then we also do our own Adopt a Forest cleanup. This year it'll be in the fall. I don't remember the exact dates off the top of my head. Actually, I'm not even sure if we've nailed down an exact date, but somewhere the middle of September.
12th and the 13th.
That's it. There you go. Craig was saying, the cleanup in St. Helen, I mean, it's no small event.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys over the years, they've cleaned up just an obscene amount of trash and stuff from the woods, and it's not on the trails per se. It's on the forest roads, county roads, everywhere in between.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my family, we're an equine family. So, we ride horses all the time.
Yeah.
And we'd be going through trails, Manistee National Forest, all the way up to Pigeon River. And they would just be absolutely filled with trash. And I'd say in the last probably 10 years, Michigan as a whole, everyone's just stepped up and really done a lot of cleanups, and the state's looking good.
And it is. But if you want to, destroy that thought that you have, the DNR has an interactive map of dump sites, and it just enrages me when I, see all the little red dots all over the state of, and those are just dump sites that are logged into the system.
And I've kind of noticed, I was going through it, I think it was last week, and their dump site map will be, a dump site will say it's active, but it was recorded 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Well, and that's the thing. It may be recorded, but there hasn't been a volunteer group that has gone out and cleaned it up. The DNR, just like any other, government entity, they work on limited resources, and they don't have crews that go out and clean up the forests. That's where organizations like Great Lakes and Wicked Jeeps and there's Sundowners
crew.
They do one down in the Allegan Forest area.
Mm-hmm.
Drummond Island ORV
Club. Well, Drummond Island does one too. But it's volunteer groups that organize this stuff and work with the DNR. There's a lady that she, one of her many jobs is coordinating the Adopt a Forest program. And there's grant money that they get. I'm not quite sure the avenues in which they get the grant money, but they usually cover the cost of the dumpsters.
Okay.
And last April, we had the Great Lakes did our cleanup over in the Cadillac area, and we filled, was it 3 or 4 dumpsters, Craig?
3 dumpsters, 2 of them.
3 dumpsters.
They're at the Coyote Crossing, and then one at the DNR office.
Yep.
In the area, and then on top of that, we filled a and how long is Adam's trailer? 38-foot long gooseneck, full stack, at least 6-foot high, full of tires and scrap metal.
Jesus.
And on the same days over in St. Helen, Wicked Jeeps filled another 3 dumpsters.
Three semi loads full of tires.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we can make a dent, but you know, the biggest thing is it takes volunteers. You know, there is never a shortage of dump sites to send people out to. We usually end up with, you know, a shortage of volunteers that we can't get to as many as we would like. And that's, you know, that's one of the biggest things about Great Lakes, that, you know, most people, I don't know that everyone fully understands it, but Great Lakes Four Wheel Drive Association is 100% volunteer run and operated, and without other, you know, other members, you know, stepping up and volunteering, we can't exist.
Right.
You know, there are some other organizations in the state where they actually have a paid on staff, you know, director of their organization. The Great Lakes is not like that. All, you know, our membership dues go to, you know, funding, retaining attorneys, or paying lobbyists, or, and as of late, we haven't even been, the people that have been going to Lansing to meetings and all that, they haven't been asking for reimbursement for their expenses. You know, it's been, 100% volunteer. But like I said, all of our membership dues and, you know, our fundraising goes to one way or another, continuing the fight and the mission of keeping trails open and being good stewards of the off-road community and of the off-road trails and of, you know, the forests that we play in. You know, if we're not good stewards, we're gonna lose it, and that's
we've been seeing it already. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the thing. You know, I'm 52, and, you know, I've been in the off-road world since I was 9 years old, riding dirt bikes. And, you know, there's so many new users out there, whether it's side-by-sides, Jeeps, Toyotas, Broncos, whatever. They only know the off-road world in Michigan the way it is now, where everything is open. You know, growing up, it was closed unless posted open. And,
right.
You know, it was, you had very, very limited riding opportunities. And now it's, everything's open. But if we don't take care of it, there's a good chance that it goes right back to being posted or closed unless posted open. And you know, unfortunately, too many people don't understand that and take a stance of, oh no, you know, they can't close it down. Baloney. They certainly can close it down.
Or they'll just remove it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Public Act, and that Great Lakes was a part of, other groups as well. It happened in 1994, developed the ORV program. It does have a clause in there that the director of the DNR pretty much at will can close any or all for any, for without reason, just by making an executive order.
Yeah, that clause sucks.
Yeah, but you know, in general, you know, one good thing that is really bolstering our relationships with not only the DNR but legislators and you know, all the way up to, you know, the governor's office, is the fact that the ORV community brings in just an obscene amount of money into the state. And
yeah,
I mean, well in excess of any other motorized recreation in the state.
The study from 2021 from Michigan State brought it in at, and mind you, that was COVID time frame. It was 8.192 billion.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, you know, having that in our back pocket certainly helps in, you know, discussions with the DNR regarding, you know, increased riding opportunities. You know, there's within the trails division of the Parks and Rec Department, which they're the ones that administer the ORV program. There's a good group of people running that part of the Parks and Recs Department. And they understand the passion that groups like ours have, and the dedication to, you know, being good stewards. And they are willing to you know, work with us a lot more and be a lot more open than in years past. You know, I've been involved with the DNR has the ORV advisory work group, or years ago it was the ORV advisory board.
God, they won't get back to me. I applied for it.
Well, they are in process. You know, I applied for it. Greg's applied for it. And they, but I've been involved with that off and on since 2000. So years ago they were a lot less willing to work with organizations. And years ago the off-road groups, the bigger off-road groups in the state, were kind of, you know, enemies of one another, we'll say. But in recent years, interestingly enough, the thing that brought us all together really was the push by the snowmobile group to ban wheeled vehicles in the winter.
Yeah.
And it really brought the ORV community together. And that's when we formed, the Michigan Motorized Recreation Council. You know, we have representatives from, you know, the full-sized ORV community, the side-by-side community, the ATV community, the dirt bike community, law enforcement. You know, it's a really broad group of people that, you know, have kind of join together and you know, we realize that we're all fighting the same fight, you know, and it's been an opportunity for us to come together as one voice to the DNR. And you know, the DNR has certainly been receptive to that.
Well, now that we got that out of the way, we should move on to a little more fun topic.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's fun. You just taught me a lot that I had no idea was going on in the state. So that this is one of those episodes I'll look back on and probably find more stuff that I missed while we were talking.
Well, and if I could add one more thing, you know, something else that the general public or a large amount of the general public doesn't quite understand is the trails and routes and stuff. The DNR doesn't do any of the maintenance or work or development of those trails. That's all done by the volunteer clubs, organizations like ours. You know, there's, you know, like over in Lake County, it's the Irons Area Tourist Association that mm-hmm. takes care of all that, and it's all volunteer labor. You know, the organizations get reimbursed, you know, X amount per mile, and you know, most of the organizations in turn, you know, give a portion of that money, you know, to reimburse the volunteers for their expenses, you know, and we're using our own vehicles and our own gas and, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, in most cases, our own chainsaws and whatnot. But all of these trails wouldn't exist if it wasn't for volunteers getting out there and doing it. And, you know, and it kind of bugs me now and then when people complain, oh, the state needs to make this trail better. Oh, this. Well, no, you need to get off your butt, get out there, find what club maintains that trail that you have an issue with, and get out there and volunteer with them. That's the old.
So do we have like an adopt a trail, or is it just the adopt a forest program?
No, the way that the trails and routes work is, we you know, like Great Lakes, we maintain, is it about 200 miles, Craig?
I think it's in total 498 or something like that.
Oh, okay. So every year, I think it's actually due like the 1st of May. So it's, JR's working on it. JR Osborne's our trail maintenance, director. But we put in a grant request, every year, and all of the other clubs and organizations do as well. And, you know, that, you know, we're going to maintain, you know, for us, we don't do any grading of routes. We do the signage and brushing, you know, keeping them trimmed back. So we apply for those miles, and then, mm-hmm. you know, we get, you know, issued that grant for, doing that maintenance. So it's not like a adopt a trail type of thing. It's actually, you know, applying for the grants to do that. And,
gotcha.
And the ORV program, you know, the funding of it is, it's 100% user funded. There's not a single penny of taxpayer money that goes into it. It's 100% user funded, by, ORV stickers and trail permits. And then, you know, there's a 50% goes to trail maintenance and development. Another percentage goes to, damage restoration. Another percentage goes to law enforcement. I can never remember all of the pieces of the pie, but it's
the education and training.
Right.
administration fee, administration part of it is actually a relatively small percentage.
Yeah. But, and, you know, if someone is trying to find out who, what organization maintains a certain trail or route, on the DNR's website, on their interactive map of, the ORV system, you can click on whatever route or trail you're interested in, and a pop-up window will come up, and you can, you know, there's usually like three or four pages to the pop-up window, but you can arrow over and it'll tell you what organization maintains that trail. So from there, then you can contact them and say, hey, I want to help out with, you know, such and such a trail. And, you know, most organizations require you to be a member to, participate in the trail maintenance stuff. And it's primarily an insurance aspect of it, but yeah, if someone wants to get out and help there, you know, you can look at that map and, you know, it's not gonna, you know, jump right out at you. You gotta dig a little bit. You know, the DNR doesn't make anything easy as far as finding information, but
no, they don't.
No, but
I think I just found that map though, which is what I was really interested in.
And frankly, if anyone has a question of, you know, I want to help with, you know, XYZ trail, they can feel free to send me an email, president@glfwda.org. And most likely I've got the contact of whomever maintains a trail, and we can get them in contact with them.
That's Facebook Messenger on our Facebook page is another good way to go to contact us quick. And actually being on the ORV Advisory Work Group subcommittee for that, I just recently acquired all the grant sponsors' names and contact information. So we do have it available.
Yeah, because that I did not know that they had that, but now I'm on the website and I can see it says who maintains it, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so I can't remember if it was you or if it was posted to the Facebook group, but you posted something about how the ORV, how the permits work and how the DNR doesn't actually put any money towards trails. I had no idea about that. Yep. So that was really interesting.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the unique aspect of our sport is, you know, we're 100% user funded, and
yeah,
you know, there's no burden on the taxpayers for our recreation. Oh
yeah, that's really cool. So on to a fun topic.
Sure.
Tom, what is your rig?
Well, guess it depends on the day and the weather.
It's a good answer.
So, like I said, I started off, you know, when I was 9 years old riding dirt bikes. And, then in the early 2000s, I got into, four wheelers. Now I had Jeeps prior to that. I got my first Jeep, about a month after I graduated high school in 1991. And since then I've gone 1 year without owning a Jeep. And like I said, I got into quads for a while, and actually I still ride quads. You know, my wife and kids and I, we ride up in the Higgins Lake Grayling area quite frequently.
But not right now.
Well, no, I just haven't gotten out yet this year, but
isn't that that's one of the spots affected by the ice storms, right?
No, north of Grayling, it's affected. We have a cottage near the west side of Higgins Lake, and there's no damage from the storm there at all. We've got four quads, and then I've got a 2024 Wrangler. Actually, I've got a 25 sitting at the lot. I just have to get the time to actually go and pick it up. But then I've got a 1965 CJ6 that's, you know,
nice.
Just it's a lawn ornament at this point in time. But eventually it'll be a trail rig of some sort. And then my main off-road vehicle is I've got a 2005 LJ. It's a mild build. I've got I don't even know how much lift because it's a Frankenstein, you know, suspension system that I've, you know, built myself. But air lockers, 35s, winch, standard stuff, it's running 35s, and that's, 35s nowadays are like the 31s of years past. But the way I look at it is there's nothing in Michigan that has challenged me to the point that I need something more than 35s. And my opinion is, all these guys running around on 40s, they don't have to rely on talent to get over stuff as much as people with lesser tires. So
I did all of Moab on 31s back in 2017.
I did, granted this was years ago, but I did all of Drummond Island on 30 by 9.5s. And
wow,
there was nothing I couldn't do. Granted, Drummond wasn't as rutted out as much as it is now, but 35s are, I think the right size for Michigan.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'll be going 35s probably right after, probably July or August. I'll be going to 35s. My 33s are pretty well on their way out.
Yeah.
I was stalking you just before we got on. Your LJ's sick.
Oh, thanks. It's it looks great in pictures from 20 feet. It's been abused. It was a really, really pretty Jeep, and the unfortunate thing is, trees and brush take a toll on it, the fact that, the last couple of years, the vast majority of my wheeling has been in the winter. So between brush and salt and everything, it's not as pretty as it was, a few years back, but, every once in a while I get the right light for a picture and it looks pretty decent.
Yeah, I've got a yellow 2000 TJ that's all tore apart in my pole barn right now.
Oh, there you go.
Right now I do the Toyota thing.
Okay.
I made a hard change from Jeeps to Toyotas.
There's nothing wrong with Toyotas. They are truly amazing sometimes what they can do. It's just incredible.
I've been very surprised by this little 98 4Runner I've got.
Yeah.
It does things that I don't even expect out of an XJ, let alone a IFS rig.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so my TJ, the last work I had done on it was in 2018. I sent it to Jeep Armory and they rebuilt the frame.
Okay.
That's how long it's been since I've touched it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I loved my Jeep. I did all of Moab. I did a lot of wheeling in Arizona. I mean, it kept going until it decided it couldn't go anymore and threw a cylinder through a wall.
Yeah. Are you one of those guys that, blew up a 4-liter?
No, mine was a 2-point squirrel.
Okay. All right. It always amazes me how, people can blow up a 4-liter. I've, over the years, I think I've put well over 1,000,000 miles on 4-liters throughout all of them that I've had. I don't understand it. I don't understand how someone can blow up a 4-liter. I mean, I had my highest mileage one was 289,000 miles. And, it didn't burn any oil at, almost 300,000 miles. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, my 2-point squirrel at like 120,000 was burning oil.
Yeah.
And then I decided it needed some more power and put a turbo on it.
Oh, well, yeah.
And
that'll do it.
That lasted about 20,000 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no one buys a Jeep because, they're powerful.
Yeah. If I had a 4.0, I would have been fine. Just crawling some of this. I was stationed in Arizona, so I went from a Jeep built for Michigan to wheeling, rocks and crawling in Arizona.
Yeah.
And it just needed that little bit more.
Yeah. So were you, in Arizona, were you, in Yuma?
Or? No, I was down by Sierra Vista, down by the border.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Fort Huachuca.
Is that Air Force or?
Army.
Oh, Army. Okay. Gotcha. I guess I used to spend a lot of time out in Arizona for work and, with the Yuma Proving Grounds out there. I'd never heard of, that military base that you were at, but most of my time was in the Phoenix area and then Kingman and Lake Havasu area.
I know. I think population density wise, Fort Huachuca is the smallest post in the Army.
Ah, okay.
So there's a lot of land with a very few people at it.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
Lots of rock crawling.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of it.
Yep. Yeah. I my one and only off-roading experience in Arizona, we did some off-road testing in the Parker area. And there's some really cool off-road trails around there. But then up by Kingman, there's a bunch of really cool stuff up there too. But
yeah, You're talking like Parker Canyon area?
Yeah, the Parker, like right along the river there. You go,
yeah.
What would that be? East. There's the Desert Bar is in that area. I can't remember yep. what the recreation area there, but there's all sorts of little canyons and you know, the canyons might only be, you know, 15 feet deep, but you know, you're wheeling in these little slot canyons, and it's pretty cool stuff. But
yeah, I think last I heard they'd shut the bar down. I don't know if it's still.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. They open, they close. I never actually got to go there. But yeah,
it was a good time.
Yeah.
When I went, the trail was pretty tore up because we had it was right after monsoon season.
Ah.
But I hear that it's not too bad for even a two-wheel drive rig most of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right. It's been really good talking to you guys. Yeah. You taught me a lot. I've actually got questions that I'm going to have to put together and reach out about now.
Well, did you want me to touch on, the situation on Drummond Island as well?
You know, that is up to you.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah, I'd love to hear about it, but I know it's a touchy subject to a lot of people.
No, I think the more information we can get out there, the less touchy it will be.
I agree.
So, you know, the short story is the work that was done out there. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But ultimately on Marblehead, we didn't lose any experience, we'll say. So before this happened, and you know, some people may not be 100% familiar with the steps at Marblehead, but there's a clump of trees. And mm-hmm. prior to this, everything north of the clump of trees, the bypass, as they were calling it, that was illegal.
Right.
It was only everything from the trees south. Well, they smoothed out the easy line on the far south end of the steps. And through discussions I had with various people in the DNR, they made the concession that all of the existing bypasses, so everything north of the trees, now is legal. So yes, they smoothed out a small section to the south, but mm-hmm. we gained the legal access to everything to the north.
But they also took out the whole trail to get there.
Well, I'm getting to that. So
<Okay. laughs>
it's a very complicated, convoluted story. So all of that land in basically the southeast end of Drummond Island, all of that land was originally purchased with what is called state game fund money. So what the state game fund is a fund set up that is funded by fishing and hunting licenses. And the reason that the state has that set up is it is a federal requirement that the state has that state game fund to be able to get federal Pittman-Robertson Act funds. The state has to have a restricted use fund that is solely for fish and wildlife conservation, whatever. And that's what the state game fund is. So there's been a lot of miscommunication about, you know, that the land out there is Pittman-Robertson Act money or Pittman-Robertson Act funded land. It's not, but it's funded by the state game fund, which has to be managed and treated as if it was Pittman-Robertson Act money. I know that's probably clear as mud.
Yeah.
But, you know, so what it comes down to is all of that land out there that the trails lie on was purchased with restricted funds. And by the letter of the law, the primary use of that land has to be for the betterment of fish and wildlife. They're years ago, and I can't remember the date. It might have been 2015, the last time that the feds had been out to do an audit, so to speak. And they noted, you know, 10 years ago, issues with excessively rutted trails, braided trails, so bypasses and bypasses of bypasses and all that. So if the feds deem, and they did note that it was obvious that the primary use of that land was not for fish and wildlife, it was for off-road vehicle usage. So the state has done, you know, their own internal audits, and that would be the wildlife division has done their own audits, and in anticipation of the federal audit, which will come in 2027, but you know they want to kind of nip it in the bud before the federal audit, because you know if the state loses Pittman-Robertson Act funding, that's, you know, millions and millions of dollars of wildlife management funding that the state would lose.
Right.
So the thing that the wildlife division in the DNR they understand that, you know, the ORV trails have been there for decades. They're a major part of the economy of the island, and they don't.
Right.
You know, my latest conversation with the deputy director or deputy chief of the wildlife division is they have no intentions of closing down the trails. They want to work with all of the other divisions to, and stakeholders like Great Lakes, like Drummond Island Off-Road Club, like Jeep Jamboree. They want to work together to come up with a solution. What that solution is, we don't know yet.
Right.
So the DNR has like an internal committee, we'll say, of people from the various different divisions that are working on coming up with some sort of equitable solution for all parties. And like I said, it's in the very early stages. But you know, one of the biggest things, and the DNR is they're kind of sticklers about this for whatever reason, I don't know. But there's a regulation that state forest roads have to be passable by conventional two-wheel drive pickup truck. And that was one of the reasons that they called it the mini steps on the trail. Yep. Leading out to Marblehead, that because that I was out there not last year, the year before, and those mini steps, in my opinion, were more of a challenge than Marblehead themselves. And that
I agree.
It had never been like that. Years back, I had driven all the way to Marblehead in two-wheel drive. And, you know, that was with my ZJ on 32s. I drove all the way to Marblehead in two-wheel drive. That those mini steps have gotten worn more and more and more, because of increased use, to the point that they weren't passable by a two-wheel drive vehicle. So for a number of reasons, you know, maintenance, for emergency vehicle access, that was why they smoothed that out. And talking with people that, you know, have spent their whole life wheeling that island, they said, you know, give it, you know, 3 to 5 years and it'll be a challenge again. It's limestone. That's just how it works.
Right.
You know, the Drummond Island Off-Road Club, and that the thing with all of this is, you know, the Drummond Island Off-Road Club took the brunt of the beating from the public for this. They did not have any involvement in any of the stuff that was done out on the island. That was 100% a DNR project.
I've kind of gathered that. I've sat through a few of their meetings now, and definitely they don't, I mean, they seem just as blindsided as everyone else was.
Yeah. So, but they, you know, in talking with the people that were out there doing, you know, that did the work, you know, the attempt was made to, you know, try to, you know, create an easy bypass over the mini steps. But there's basically a limestone ridge that runs for like a half mile.
Right.
So there was nowhere that they could bypass that. So yeah, unfortunately that was taken out. The increased use, you know, has really taken a toll on the trails on the island. You know, the ruts are getting deeper, ledges are getting steeper, the ledges, that's not really where the issue lies. The ruts are where, the issues really lie, especially out at tank traps.
Yeah.
Paint traps. So it had been probably 6-7 years since I had been out to tank traps, and I was just appalled by just what a cluster it has turned into. And that area is a huge sticking point for the Wildlife Division and for the feds. Because I mean, it is flat out turned into a scramble area. And
it's bad.
And that's one of the ideas floating around is, okay, well, if we, you know, that however many acres that might be 40, 50 acres, whatever, that the ORV fund, you know, purchases that basically from the Wildlife Division and designates it as a scramble area. That's one of the ideas. Others is, you know, there's some holes there that, I mean, just from a safety standpoint, they need to be filled. And people will chastise me for saying that they need to be filled. I was out there in August when it was dry, and stand in the bottom of these holes and they're 8 feet deep. I'm sorry, someone out there on a quad, which I've ridden the island on a quad, they roll into a water hole like that, their machine's gone. I mean,
I sent you a video from Instagram from my 4Runner being underwater out of the tank traps. I mean, it gets deep there.
Yeah, in the spring, I mean, everywhere on the island, I've sank my ZJ out there on the North Fork, and I mean, it's, you know, 5 foot deep in the spring. But yeah, I mean, they're like I said, there's a lot of places that are just they've been left to fester into what they are now. The DNR will, you know, or at least the trail specialist for that area, you know, he will, you know, admit that, you know, over the years there hasn't been enough of an eye on the island by the DNR, that's going to change. You know, another thing that's a big sticking point is the, driving on the beaches. Now there is only one place in the entire state of Michigan where it is legal to ride on the beach, and that is Southeast Beach over out by Plywood Camp on Drummond Island, where the trail comes out, and you know, and there's kind of like a wetland area, and it comes around that, comes out onto the beach for about 200 yards and back into the woods right by Plywood Camp. That is the only place that it's legal to ride on the beach in the state of Michigan. Unfortunately, Glen Cove, Pilot Cove, Shale Beach, people are driving out there. People are, you know, driving into the water. I mean, heck, even at Southeast Beach, people are driving out into the water and getting pictures because, oh, it looks cool. Well, yeah, you post that up on Instagram or Facebook, and the DNR sees it. And the DNR has tracked people down because of photos like that. Like some years ago, people drove into the water at Fossil Ledges. And
how did they even get down there?
I'm not 100% sure, but they did it. People,
Jesus.
And the off-road community really banded together to track down who it was, and the DNR caught them, and they smacked them with some major, major fines.
Good.
But, you know, the beaches, like, again, that's one of the big sticking points with the Wildlife Division. You know, and they've been blocked off with big boulders, but people, you know, take that as a challenge. Oh, I can winch that rock out of the way and I can get get out on the beach. You know, oh, what harm is it doing? I'm just, you know, it's just one person out of, well, that one person turns into 10, turns into 100, turns into 1,000, and, you know, then we lose access.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, my short little story about Drummond kind of turned into a little long-winded, but, you know, Craig can attest that I'm known for being long-winded.
There's no one better to know what's going on than you guys. Yeah. I mean, you've done most of the footwork here in Michigan anyway. Yeah. So,
yeah. So, well, we've built good relationships out of the negative of the work that was done out on Drummond. Out of that has come a good working relationship with the DNR for that area. And an improved relationship with Drummond Island Off-Road Club. I mean, Great Lakes has always had strong ties to Drummond Island Off-Road Club, but you know, everyone kind of drifted apart for a while, and now we're kind of coming back, and
from what I've gathered, the Drummond Island Off-Road Club of today is not the Drummond Island Off-Road Club of 10 years ago.
No, it is not. So the founding members, one being Steve Walker, Steve's really gotten up there in age, and, you know, he's not involved much at all in the off-road world. After he and some of the original members kind of drifted away, the Drummond Island Tourist Association took over, as the grant sponsor. So they technically Drummond Island Off-Road, I think they're calling it Drummond Island Off-Road Corporation, is an entity of the Drummond Island Tourist Association. So they are the ones doing, you know, applying for the maintenance grants for the trail system, both 50-inch trail and ORV route. So it is not the same off-road club that it was. I'm optimistic that it's going to be a positive thing. The way that things are structured now. But you know, everything remains to be seen. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I do appreciate you touching on that. Again, you guys have so much more insight on that stuff than I do. I've been learning a lot over the last year about how things work here in Michigan, but there's a lot of stuff that's changing every day, so it's hard to keep up with.
Yep. So
it's been good talking to you guys. That puts us just over my hour. Sure. So if you have anything else to say, I guess now's the time to do it.
I've blabbered on, you know, what Craig I'm sure can add some insight here.
I appreciate you giving us the opportunity and hopefully getting some of the word out there on what's going on, not only who we are, but, you know, if you're involved in the ORV community, seek out the local grant sponsor and clubs in the area you like to frequent and get involved with them. I mean, most of them are $20-$25 for a family membership. And it's a small price to pay for what they do. And, you know, if nothing else, you know, at least get involved with a membership. And if you're so inclined and able to, get involved with the trail maintenance, trail development and that. And just FYI, right now, Great Lakes has got 3 proposals in for trail improvements and expand and new routes. And then, and we're working on some other ones as well, because somebody that like Tom said, the DNR doesn't do it. It's the users that do it.
Yep. Yeah. If we want a, you know, a new feature or new experience or new trail, it is 100% up to the users to initiate that process of, you know, designing or building a trail and or getting the approval and the funding to build it. And like Craig said, we've got a couple of projects in the works. You know, I'm not going to elaborate on them.
Okay.
Because
I was saying, any hints on locations?
We'll just say the St. Helen area. You know, it's some
and beyond.
Some really cool stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but it's the very early stages and everyone's got to understand the DNR moves like molasses in January. It's painful sometimes. But yeah,
storm damage is probably going to cost us a year or two, but nonetheless,
easily.
Great thing going on.
It bothers me that they shut trails down rather than asking help to clear them.
Well, this is the thing. You know, there was the emergency order put in place in those
yep.
northern counties, and they're still just trying to get normal day-to-day life back on track. The recreation trails, and I agree with them, the recreation trails right now are, you know, come last, you know.
Right.
Gates, you know.
Candidly, I got pictures today from some of our members that were out scouting. They're downright dangerous. There's widowmakers out there that even scare a guy like me. I've been... pretty sketchy situation.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, some sticks laying on the trail. It's, you know, miles of trail just completely obliterated. And like Craig said, the dangers of, you know, the trees that are hung up in other trees, and it would be irresponsible to have left the trails open right now.
Right.
Because I mean, it, you know, we have a number of ORV routes up in that area that we, maintain, and those are going to be challenging enough, but, you know, friends of ours with Cycle Conservation Club of Michigan that maintain the bulk of the 50 inch and 24 inch motorcycle trails. I honestly don't know how they're going to do it. Because I've maintained 50 inch trail before, and it is slow going. I mean, basically the way that those trails are right now, they may as well just leave their dirt bikes or quads at home. Because they're just gonna, they just have to walk all of those miles of trail, and, you know, every few feet cutting trees.
And there's no place to drag that stuff off like they normally do. They're literally trying to muster skid steers and small tractors with forks on them and things like that. It is. Tough. Now that said, the Leota area, the Cadillac area, the Lake County area, St. Helen, Ogama, those areas were not hit, and the grant sponsors in those areas are stepping up and knowing that they are seeing heavier traffic than normal, and they are, you know, they're volunteers out there that would dedicate a day or a day and a night. A week, they're going two and three times a week now knowing, trying to make provisions for, you know, the upcoming holiday weekends and that, knowing that north, you know, further north, people aren't going to be able to utilize it, even if they want to and insist that nobody can stop them, they're just not going to be usable.
Yep. Right. Yeah, we've got an event coming up in Everett, so I'm glad to see that they weren't hit. Yep. And we got an event coming up in Cadillac, so I'm glad they weren't hit.
Yeah. No, I was just in the, west of Higgins Lake. West Higgins Lake ORV route and West Higgins Lake mm-hmm. ORV trail. And from what I can tell, there's very, very minimal damage. I don't think there's anything in excess of what is your normal, tree downage. There's always on the 50 inch trails, there's always a little bit of, you know, trees down here or there every winter. It's just comes with the territory, but from right. what I can tell, very, very minimal. So pretty much if you draw a line from Grayling to Mayo and everything south of that, it's 100% clear, and you know, people can ride no problems. North of that is going to be a work in progress all summer long, I think.
Honestly, seeing some of the damage I've seen, I could see it going into next year.
It's possible. Yeah.
There's some stuff that, I mean, like you were saying, there's trails that just don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I need to have a call up, the guys from Cycle Conservation Club and see if they've had any, scouting reports for any of the trails up there for the 50 inch side of it. And that's the thing,
they have great scouted as late as today, the Mayo, the Atlanta, and the Indian River area. Just before this, I was on the phone with a few of them.
Okay. Yeah, and that's, where Great Lakes is going to throw our help behind, some of these other organizations. And, not all of our members have, 50-inch quads or anything like that. But those that do, we're going to, try to, if they're so inclined, get them in contact with, these other clubs and get them the help that they need. Cause it's going to take a lot of work, and
there's no other way to put it. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So
I'm looking at the map and it's just like the whole northeastern side of the state is just, lower peninsula is just blanketed in closed trails.
Yep. So, yeah.
Well, all right. I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, maybe in like a year we should get together again. I'd like to hear some updates.
Yeah, for sure. You should. Well, we'll have our summer membership meeting that, anyone's welcome to it. And then in the fall, we'll have our Adopt a Forest. I'd love to see you out there for that.
For sure.
Rocks and Valleys in the first weekend in December for our Toys for Tots drive. And then
you'll probably see me.
And
there.
Then in, I don't know that we have the date nailed down just yet, but
we do have the date nailed down, but I don't remember it. It's at the end of January. We'll be doing our winter blast. And that's a
winter blast in West Branch. That's a ton of fun. That is a really good time.
That's definitely one I want to try and get to, because that always looks like fun.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
I'll catch you guys later.
Alrighty. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed that, interview. Like I said, Tom's an It was an awesome interview. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot about off-roading in Michigan and how it works and why we do it the way that we do. It's pretty cool. But I hope you didn't think you were getting out of here without getting to listen to some value-for-value music, because I've got the Jetsons lined up and ready to go for you. I will have a link to it so you can boost in the artist, send him his sets. It's a great song. This is one of my favorite value for value songs, and I'm glad that the guys decided to vote this one in as the winner for this week's end of episode outro music. I don't know what we're going to call it yet, but all right, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview and have a great week.
You talk about the future. What do you see? Is it an ocean of color growing exponentially? What keeps me up through the nighttime? Keeps me dreaming through the day? Is that the goddess of wisdom is only a block away? I wanna fly with the Jetsons. I wanna shoot past the stars. I wanna take you to a place you've never been before. When nothing rhymes like purple and orange, you can count the cold as law. I wanna fly with the Jetsons. I wanna shoot past the stars. What's done is done. I wanna fly with the Jetsons.